to my Al-Anon family worldwide. Yeah, so as Yvonne says, Julian asked me to stand in for a bit because of the load shedding that we have in South Africa. So I would like to introduce our first speaker. Her name is Vasantha from the Greenwood Park Group in KwaZulu-Natal. So I too was a member of that group whilst I lived in KwaZulu, Durban, South Africa, before I moved to the beautiful West Coast, Cape Town.
What's the difference, Debbie?
The East Coast? It's the East Coast? Well, East Coast is the beautiful, warm sandy beaches. The West Coast is the cold sandy beaches, and the language is English, mostly English in the East Coast, and mostly Afrikaans in the West Coast. So yeah, and there's, I mean, obviously lots of beauty in both of the coastal areas. Yeah.
So if I want to visit, I would need to go to the West Coast, because I want to hear Afrikaans.
Yeah.
The Serenity Prayer for us in Afrikaans.
Yes, you want me to do it?
Yes, of course I want you to do it.
Okay. God, gee my die genade van die dinge wat nie verander kan word nie. Moet met kalmte te aanvaar die dinge wat verander moet word om te verander en die wysheid om die een te onderskei van die ander.
Thank you.
So without much ado, I'd like to introduce our first speaker, who is Vasantha.
Vasantha, can you unmute yourself? Vasantha, you had it there for a second. Yep, there you are.
Is that good?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you and we can see you. Hello, Vasantha.
Hi, birthday blessings to you, Yvonne.
Thank you.
And I hope you're having a super fab day.
I am having a good day. I had a great weekend. Thank you.
Yes, I know. So greetings, salutations, and warm wishes from the Rainbow Nation, the beautiful South Africa, and the ever sunny Durban. Good morning. And good afternoon, my dearest Al-Anon friends. My name is Vasantha, and indeed, I am a grateful member of the Al-Anon family group, Greenwood Park, South Africa. I begin my share today with gratitude to my higher power, for as I awake each morning, I experience the miracle of my beating heart. Thank you, God, for I am alive, healthy, loved, forgiven, and blessed. To the Coordinating Committee of Al-Anon Without Borders, thank you for affording South Africa the opportunity of being part of this unforgettable experience of zooming around the world in 3 awesome days. Thank you, Julian, for coordinating our team so efficiently. You know, during the stressful times of social distancing, phone calls, video chats, WhatsApp chats, and Zoom meetings have helped our members feel loved, cared for, less lonely, and less isolated. For me, today is an opportunity to travel the world whilst in the comfort of my home. If Al-Anon has taught me anything during this pandemic, it has taught me to search for the positive when faced with challenges. And here I am today, sharing on an international podium, something I could only dream of, made possible only because of the deadly COVID-19 pandemic. My share today centers around my recovery via step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. In this step, we sought out our part, taking responsibility for our actions, but also releasing ourselves from the burden of a harmful and guilt-ridden past. I walked through the doors of Al-Anon, a proud wife of a sober husband, for approximately 3 years. At this time, my life was going according to plan. After all my time, my all-time enemy, my poison, the remover of my happiness, alcohol, had left my world. In these early days, I attended Al-Anon meetings faithfully, enjoyed reading my literature thoroughly. But the serenity, peace, happiness, and contentment that my Al-Anon friends confessed to have achieved escaped my very grasp. I knew if I worked the program, it would work for me. During these years, I truly believed that I was working the program to the best of my ability. After all, wasn't reading my conference-approved literature, listening to the experiences, strengths, and hopes of other members, the cornerstone of our program. Yet, discontentment, anger, and resentment continued to be a lingering factor in my otherwise happy home. Like most young women, I always dreamed of a perfect, happy ending once I married. Now, I assumed with the removal of alcohol, surely my dream of a happy ending was here. Little did I know that there was more to recovering from the effects of alcoholism than just living with a sober alcoholic. Luckily for me, I continued attending meetings. Thank God for our wise and understanding long-timers who gradually and subtly pointed me in the correct direction, explaining via their experience, strength, and hope why one still remained miserable even whilst attending meetings. All I had to do was have an open mind. I began to see how I really had no grasp on the Al-Anon program. Eventually, my discontentment and emotional status caused me mountains of undue despair and pain. Now I was told that I had finally hit my rock bottom, and if I wanted recovery, change was the name of the game. After approximately 6 years into the program, believe me or not, I admitted that I was probably my greatest enemy and that only I could, with the help of my higher power and the power tools of Al-Anon, turn my life around, and so began my journey of recovery using the steps and traditions. This became my new way of life. Working the 12 steps program has allowed me the golden opportunity of turning my life over to a power greater than myself, redirecting me towards seeking happiness, contentment, and a new beginning. Working steps 1 to 7 has truly helped me discover and acknowledge that seeking God could restore my sanity and make my life more manageable. Making a fearless moral inventory was by far the most difficult, but certainly one of the most rewarding. It helped me find the very core of my being. Today, I am able to acknowledge my faults, work towards it, pay more attention to myself, and finally recognize I'm not perfect, but am indeed capable of loving and being loved. In step 8, we are given a new task, to make a list of all persons we had harmed. Although I had made a mental list of all persons I thought I had harmed, I never really accomplished a written one until the universe threw me a curveball. Just when I thought I got my life figured out, enjoying the fruits of practicing my Al-Anon program, God had his own plan for me. On the 4th of June, 2016, seems to me like only yesterday, I was diagnosed with an oftentimes fatal illness known as Steven Johnson syndrome, an allergic reaction to medication. I sustained severe damage to my skin and mucous membranes, resembling third-degree burns. Doctors had lost all hope and advised my closest and dearest that I will not survive this life-threatening illness. I am here today only by the grace of God. Upon surviving a close encounter with death, and during the painful days of my recovery, I learned that life is too short. I needed to make amends and make them now. I knew I had to make amends, but didn't know where to begin. Making a list of persons I had harmed was not an easy one. Each time a loved one, a family member, or a friend visited me during this period of recovery, I knew I owed them an apology for my inconsideration, intolerance, impatientness, and sometimes selfish behavior. Finally, I arrived at the moment of truth, putting pen to paper and writing out my list. Looking at my 4th step inventory gave me the guidelines I needed to build upon. In step 4, I already acknowledged many of my defects of character, and I wasn't surprised at all when my alcoholic husband was by far on the top of my list of people I had harmed. During his active days, I cursed, I demoralized, I shouted, I screamed, I lied, I even stole from him. I became someone I wasn't, lashing out at the alcoholic and blaming him whenever things were not quite right. My 2 sons grew up in a home with parents continuously arguing, living in fear and begging me, their mom, to please be quiet when dad arrived home after a drinking session. Today, doing my Al-Anon program, I recognize the harm I have caused them. There were times I had locked them up in the room, commanding them to be silent or pretend to be asleep. A very vivid memory comes back to me when my little boy of 8 said, "Mommy, please open the door. Dad will not do anything to us." Today, when I read my Al-Anon literature and some of the readings bring us back to the harms we have done in the past, I feel the pain and hurt that I caused my children. My mom and my in-laws could recognize that my behavior was causing a lot more harm to the alcoholic than met the eye. And they too bore the brunt of my behavior. Eventually, everyone that loved the alcoholic, I began to hate. And as I worked on the defects of my character, the list got a lot longer. As the Al-Anon program suggests, putting the focus on myself, I was surprised to discover just how much I had harmed myself by simply wasting hours, days, months, and years focusing on the alcoholic. I had neglected myself, eventually hating the person I had become. After making the list, the second part of the step required become willing to make amends. Oh, and what a relief it was, knowing that I didn't yet have to take the frightening step of making amends. I didn't need to do anything just yet. All I needed to do was to become willing. The very idea of making amends was devastating and frightening. What if the harmed individual still resented me? I was told by an Al-Anon sister that this was the time to seek God's interception. For me, this is a step that prepares me for step 9. Every day, I pray for the willingness to become willing to make amends. For me, this step is a work in progress. I am not perfect. Every day, I am faced with new challenges. Sometimes my thinking may become distorted. And as I continue my journey of recovery, I continue to take inventory and continue to become willing to make amends. Becoming willing to make amends to those I harmed is actually a very humbling experience. But indeed a growing experience to actually admit wrongdoing. This process eventually relieves us from carrying the burden of guilt. In becoming willing, I needed to look at what my amends might be. Making amends involves actually doing something physical to make things right again. My actions will demonstrate my willingness to turn those I had hurt around. And because I am doing something, I am proving that I really mean my apology. An apology, I have learned, can fix many things, but it doesn't always make it right. Making amends is more in depth. It goes deeper and seeks to right the wrong through a change in behavior. Step 8 is the beginning of the process of making amends, forgiving others, and possibly being forgiven by them. In addition, at last we reach a stage where we can forgive ourselves. I would like to touch a little bit on step 9, because as I completed step 8, I knew I had the task of actually making amends in my step 9. And for me, I looked at this as carrying a heavy knapsack or backpack filled with stones. And each time I looked at my list and decided to make amends to the individual on my list, I would take out a stone and throw it away. And sooner or later, my backpack would surely become empty. In conclusion, I just want to say, sometimes we hurt others more than we realize. Sometimes a smile fades in front of our eyes. And sometimes we are the reason for tears in someone else's eyes. Never treat anyone the way you don't want to be treated. Love life and love the ones around you. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Vashanta, and we're happy you got all better. That was quite, I've never heard of that. I had to look it up for a second. Thank you so much for being participating. Good to see you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Jillian is back. Jillian, can you unmute yourself?
Yeah, I have. Thanks, Yvonne. Thank you very much. Sorry about the glitches, but I know my plan B worked perfectly. So thank you very much, Devi, for introducing Vasantha. And I caught the end of her share, and it was lovely. Thank you. I'm now going to hand over to Sue. And Sue is from Pretoria, which is the legislative capital of South Africa. It's near to Johannesburg, and she's at the Murelletu Group. And she's been in Al-Anon for some 24 hours. So I'm going to hand over to Sue.
Sue, you can unmute yourself. Yes, there you are.
Thank you. Thank you. Why aren't I in the screen?
You are in the screen. You're in my screen.
Am I in the screen? Okay, good. Thank you. Hi, my name is Sue, and thank you. Thank all of you for letting me come and speak to you today. Thank you, Gillian, for all the work you've put in. I know you've done a lot of work speaking to people around the country. And thank you to Vanya and your team. It's a great privilege to be here, and I'm very excited. Ah, amends. Those are the hard ones. Making the list was easy. It's carrying on from there that is harder. But in order to really highlight what amends did for me, I've decided to focus on two in my life. And you'll see why as I go along. But I need to first tell you a little bit about who I am so that you understand my amends. Right. So who am I? I was born and raised in a country that was then called Rhodesia. It's now called Zimbabwe. And we lived in the middle of nowhere. And I didn't go to school in junior school. My mom homeschooled us. And we only went off to high school when we went to boarding school. When I got to boarding school, I discovered that I could do 3 hours of homework in silence in the prep room every afternoon, or I could become good at sport. That was my option. So having never done sport, because I hadn't been to school before, I suddenly became an excellent sportswoman, anything rather than sitting in prep. The good thing about sport in the school I went to was it was a ticket to becoming known and confident, and people sought you out as a friend. And I'm saying that because this subsequently became part of a problem in my personality. So at school, I became the person that saved the kids that had no friends. I was the one who gathered them all under my wing and looked after everybody and made sure everyone got treated well by everybody else. I always was the peacemaker, the people pleaser, the one in the middle. That's who I was. Now, if some of you are wondering where I got that from, I grew up in the home of an adult child who never found the program. My mother was an adult child of alcoholics, and I had no experience with alcoholics. Our family only drank once or twice a year. Every year on my mother's and father's wedding anniversary, the family of six would sit down to dinner and share a bottle of wine. And as you can imagine, one bottle of wine between six did not make any of us turn into alcoholics overnight. The only other experience I had of alcohol was when it rained in our area, my father would mix a wheat beer shandy and we'd sit on the lawn in the rain and enjoy it because it very seldom rained. That's why I say one or two drinks a year, because it only rained every second year where we lived. So I had no experience of alcoholism, but I had the experience of growing up with an adult child. And my mother was very much a conditional love mother. If you loved me, you'd do your homework without being asked. If you loved me, you'd wash the dishes without being asked. If you loved me, if you loved me, if you loved me, you'd be a perfect child. And there were five of us, and none of us were perfect. So you can imagine, I grew up always having to be perfect to qualify for love. So when I got to boarding school and I found all these other children who were sometimes worse off than me, I could give them love. I could look after them. I could be their hero, and I could make sure everybody was safe. Until I didn't. And when I reached late high school, I was told that I would be made a prefect the next year. Now, for those of you in America, you probably don't really understand the concept, but in boarding hostels, prefects run the hostel. They're senior girls who are chosen to run the hostels under the supervision of one or possibly two teachers. So it was quite a responsible position, and it came with a lot of privileges. So it was something that was sought after. And a teacher took me aside and said to me, "You will never make prefect while you have all your broken wing friends." So I dropped them. I didn't need them anymore. Now, what kind of person does that? And what's more, when I was in grade two, my teacher had told my parents that I had a very strong sense of justice. Well, by the time I got to high school, that had turned into judgment. And I was working on that pretty well. Yes, I was made a prefect. I enjoyed being a prefect. And yes, I hurt friends in the process. When I left school, I went to the United States for a year. I lived in Wisconsin for a year. And I went to a university in Madison and then later in Ohio at Oberlin College for a while. Unfortunately, my visa was not renewed, so I was sent back to Zimbabwe to reapply. When I got back to Zimbabwe, we were told no applications were being accepted from Zimbabwe, so that was the end of my university, and I went off and found myself a job. So here I was, an adult, out in the world, with an overblown sense of judgment, just for a start, a people pleaser, and someone that was almost ripe and perfect for an alcoholic to come along. So, the story of my first amend, it's one that I've never been able to make. Amends are the physical activity of practicing humility. And it's more than an apology. If you look at the ancient Greek form of apologize, it came about as to tell a story in your defense. It was a legal legislative action back in the day. So an amend is much more than an apology. So I was now back in Harare. I'd come back from the Americas. I was living and working, and I was waiting to find my alcoholic husband, not that I knew it at that stage. When I came across one of my broken wing friends from school, and my poor friend Jackie, I shall call her Jackie, she was an adult child of an alcoholic. Her mother had died young and her father had drunk himself into a stupor from the day of her funeral. She was a kind of child who loved boarding school because it offered stability and friendship. When Michelle was 17, she fell pregnant, and in those days, in where I lived, when you fell pregnant at that age, you left school and you got married, which is what she did. Unfortunately, the marriage was a disaster, and she got divorced by the time she was 19, and when I met her back in Harare, she told me that she was about to get married to her second husband, and she was pregnant. And would I please come to her wedding? Because nobody else from her family was coming. And the worst of it is I said yes, because that was the easy way out at the time. But in my head, my judgment was in full force. And I just thought, you loser, can you imagine having to get married twice in a row? And I didn't go to her wedding. I didn't pitch. And I have never seen her again. I've never been able to find her. I've never been able to apologize. I've never been able to make that amend. So the only way I can make amends to my friend is to work and do steps and do 12-step work and sponsor and do service in Al-Anon. because I cannot make that amend. That one is going to stay with me forever, unless by some miracle she's on this. And I wish she was. As an adult child, she needs to be. But nonetheless, that is my problem. That is not her problem. So that's where an amend that I couldn't make has stayed with me. And I've had to try and turn it into positive action within our 12-step program. And I will continue to do that until I can no longer operate physically or mentally. The thing with amends is not only do we need to make things right, we have to do it with humility. Humility means being of the unself. It means doing something with neither pride nor self-deprecation, to just be neutral. And that is not always easy to do. So now back to my story. I met a wonderful man, like all alcoholics, charming, above average intelligence, fun, wild. And I was the goody-goody. I didn't break the rules. I was the one who did everything right. So naturally, I was wildly attracted to this very good-looking man. And he was a paratrooper at the time in the Rhodesian Army. And I am a bit of a sucker for men in uniform. And I'm sure the Israelis listening today can identify with that to a large extent. So yes, I fell in love with a wonderful, handsome, good-looking man, not an alcoholic, never an alcoholic. So, sorry, excuse me, this cat who never comes home has come home now, sorry. So I met my alcoholic, we got married, we had a lot of fun, life was good, we traveled. When we were young, we had a beautiful home, we had a lot of money, we had it all. We had it all, and we drank a lot. And in a lot of war situations, it's a good excuse to eat, drink, and make merry. And we did. We made the most of it. Life was good. When my daughter was born, after 5 years of marriage, we moved to South Africa because she was very sick and needed the kind of medical care that we could get down here. We ended up staying in South Africa because when you move and you emigrate, you often become a financial prisoner where you've got to. Plus, Zimbabwe is still not yet quite as attractive as it used to be to go back to. But you never know what the future holds. So here we are in South Africa. We're married. And my husband is not drinking like he used to drink. He calmed down. We were civilized drinkers. We would drink on the weekends. We'd have a glass of wine when friends came around. We drank a better quality wine in South Africa because Zimbabwe wine, let me tell you, was terrible. And I never, ever once thought that he was an alcoholic. Unfortunately, as time went by, the wild impetuosity turned into irresponsibility and irritability. And I began to think that my husband had had a nervous breakdown of some sort, or a midlife crisis. And I told my children all the time, Daddy's stressed. Don't worry about Daddy. He's just stressed. He's just stressed. But I was also stressed. And life was difficult. It slowly, it was such a gradual sinking, a spiral down into the depths of alcoholism, that I was in denial for a long, long time. And by the time I was pushed through the doors of Al-Anon, I didn't have any faults, none, because everything that was wrong in my life was my alcoholic's faults. Now, I've already told you the story of Michelle, so you know perfectly well that I was lying to myself. And when I came into these rooms and I was told that I needed to concentrate on me and not my alcoholic, I was angry. I'm quite happy for everybody else in the world to change, but I don't want to change. And I only went back to the second meeting because I was told it was a fourth step meeting and I was going to list all my husband's faults and then new people were going to tell me how to fix them. and I was extremely disappointed the following week to hear everybody else discussing their own faults, because I didn't have any. And even if I did have any, they were the alcoholic's fault. And if I had done or said something wrong, I didn't have to apologize because he wouldn't remember. And I used that. I was extremely smug. And I was extremely powerful. I could turn the knife of guilt in between his ribs and twist it a little over morning coffee and make him feel bad about a lot of things. I was not a nice person. I was also deeply unhappy. I recently met someone from those days who said to me, "Oh, wow, you're quite fun." And I said to her, "I've always been fun." She said, "No, you haven't. You've been miserable," which was true. I was miserable. And Al-Anon took me in. They welcomed me. They didn't care that I was judgmental. They didn't care that I sat there thinking, these people have been here for 12 years. There's only 12 steps. How hard can this be? And I have to confess, I've now been here for 18 years, and I still have to make my amends, do things according to my program, because as soon as I deviate from my program, I get unhappy. So there's every reason, I know all the reasons I should stick with this program, and yet still, my ego can slip in between me and my higher power and make me say things and do things that I know are wrong. The longer I've been in this program, the easier it becomes to make amends. The easier it becomes for me to do my 10th and 11th step and to get up and pick up the phone and phone that person that I was rude to today and say, "I'm sorry, I am." And I do. I borrow from what I've heard in the alcoholics' rooms. I borrow from them and I tell them I am selfish, self-centered, inconsiderate, and driven by fear. And I offer you the most sincere apology. And if I can make it up to you, please tell me what you need me to do. Quite often, that just makes the problem go away. Sometimes it doesn't, like my problem with my friend Michelle. I've now got to the point where I do try habitually every day to start my day off with a prayer of gratitude. I try to be grateful rather than to supplicate my higher power. I try to remind myself that I am in a good place. I have a roof over my head. I have food in my stomach. I am warm. And trust me, at the moment in Pretoria, it is cold. It is very cold. And we don't have internal heating. We just make do. So if it's 1 degree outside, it's 1 degree in here. So it is cold, but I am warm and I am fed and I am safe and I am comfortable. And I am grateful. I am grateful for this program. I am grateful for the miracle of finding a new higher power. I was raised as the equivalent, we say here, a bush Baptist, which basically means if a priest came into the area and was prepared to give some sort of service, we'd all go to it, mostly for the braaiplees or the barbecue afterwards. So I had no particular religion that I prescribed to. At high school, my mother wrote down on my application form that I was an Anglican, so I went to the Anglican church every Sunday, until I discovered that the Catholics got a lot more bacon because they ate later in the day. So I became a Catholic because I really like bacon. Good, sound, theological reasoning, as you can see. So by the time I became a Catholic through confirmation, as an adult, when I met my husband. It was one of the things that he had asked was that our children would be raised as Catholics. And so I accepted that I would be a Catholic and our children would be Catholic. And again, I've heard a little saying in AA, you don't have to be Catholic to be an alcoholic, but it helps. So we were ripe. And when I came into Al-Anon, I had no God. I was angry with God. God didn't listen to me and didn't take instructions because that's all I gave him. I couldn't pray anymore. I just gave him the usual instructions. Bring him home early. Bring him home sober. Don't bring him home. bring him home later, bring him after the kids are in bed, put him in jail, don't put him in jail. Those were my prayers. I never once, I'd say, fix Frank, fix Frank, fix Frank, fix Frank. I never, ever, ever said, fix Sue. Never once did I ask to be fixed. And Al-Anon gave me the tools to fix Sue. Al-Anon gave me the tools to stop obsessing over somebody else's life. I was as obsessed with alcohol as my husband was. I just didn't drink it. At least he occasionally had some fun. I never had any fun. And I was miserable. And I came into these rooms and found a God of my own understanding. And I began to work the steps. I had a strict sponsor who was quite insistent that I do so. Although I have to confess, looking back at her, she was kind of easy on me because I was married to an alcoholic. She was Irish and she was lovely. And she taught me how to laugh again. And we had some wonderful times. So I had to refine my higher power. I had to start from scratch. I had to build an entirely new concept of a higher power. And I had to build a relationship with that higher power. And when it came to doing my amends, there were some I didn't want to do. And it was actually my husband who said to me, do you want a relationship with a higher power? Or do you want a relationship with this person? And that's how I started to tackle the harder amends on my list. And I managed to cross most of them off relatively quickly and have reestablished relationships with people that I had thought was long gone. Now, my second amend that I wanted to specifically talk about, it wasn't something so much that I did. It was something that somebody else did to me. There was a woman who caused a lot of trouble. She tried very hard to drive a wedge between myself and my husband. And this was in sobriety. And we dealt with it. We know how, we've had it. We know how to, we have an open relationship. We talk about things. We understand each other. And I think because this person was fairly new in the program, she didn't expect us to react the way that we did. That's beside the point. Anger came back into my life because it could have been worse. It could have been more destructive. And, you know, the what ifs are always the worst kind of movies in our heads. So I needed to get beyond it. And every time I thought I had, something would happen and I'd be angry again. And we were part of an organization of a rally in Pretoria. And I had been in and out of the rally hall, no Zoom in those days. And I had been just tidying up in the kitchen with some people and I slipped into the back of the hall, into the very back row, right towards the end of the meeting. And there was this woman. And I was angry. I thought, how dare she even come here? The way she behaves, she shouldn't be allowed in. And all my anger and resentment bubbled up and I was sitting there thinking terrible things I wanted to say to her. And someone on stage said, when you're really, really stuck in anger, you just need to say, your words, God, not mine. Your words, higher power, not mine. And at the last minute, as we were saying the serenity prayer, that is what I said, your words, not mine. And I walked out of that hall where people were stacking chairs at the end of the rally. And there this woman was. Not only was she there in front of me, she was stuck between two rows of chairs and couldn't get out. And instead of punching her in the nose, which is what I had planned to do, I stepped forward, I put my arms around her, and I said to her, hello, how are you? I hope you are getting better. And I stepped away. When I left those piles of chairs, all the anger was gone. The anger was gone and it hasn't come back. back. That was nothing I planned, nothing I wanted to do. It was purely a gift from my higher power. And I think I have reached the end of my time. Those were my two examples. I want to just try and keep spending my life staying on top of my amends. And I wish you all a good meeting the rest of today. Have a wonderful evening. I won't be with you all evening, I think, because of load shedding. But thank you for this wonderful opportunity to share. Goodbye.
Sue, thank you so much for being with us. I thoroughly enjoyed you.